Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 303 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is January 13th, 2014. We got a special show this week. Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer, is going to carry the whole show. We got a secret assignment for Coach Harvey Hyde. He's on his way to Las Vegas, and we're going to just talk to Dan this week and a lot of different topics to talk about with what's been going on with USC football. We're going to get to all of that, but if you have any questions or comments, we do love to hear from you. Like to play them on the air. Podcast at uscfootball.com is our email address. You can call 206-888-6755 and leave a voicemail. We can play that on the podcast, or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com, and click on the left side of the page. You can leave a voicemail right from your computer. So lots of different ways you can get in touch with us. All right. Well, we want to get to Dan Weber joining us online right now. Hey, Dan, what's going on?
Hey, kind of a, new week, new chapter in kind of USC football. It looks like, this is kind of the week where, instead of looking back, everybody starts to look ahead with the introduction to the press from the new coaching staff in person happening Tuesday. And, I think it's a good thing. It's been difficult for them kind of not to be, out there in the public and for people to get to know them. And so this is, kids are back in school and focusing by day after tomorrow. You know who all is coming back and who's going to be on the team and where it goes from here. But I think this is kind of a looking forward start to what they need to have happen and get past, all the drama of this fall, from the 1st of September on. We've had nothing but drama.
There's been certainly been a lot of drama, for head coaches over a, 2.5 month span or whatever it was. So it's been kind of crazy, and people weren't really sure what was going to happen as far as the assistant coaching staff goes. We're going to talk about where some of the former USC assistants, now former USC assistants and head coach, are a little bit later on. But I wanted to mention the new coaches, Dan. And there's new assistant coaches. It looks like Sarkisian staff is settled right now. We're actually going to get a chance to talk with them on Tuesday at USC so we can meet all the new assistant coaches and kind of give you a report on what's going on with that. But I wanted to get your thoughts on, some of these new guys that they're bringing in.
It's an interesting, combination of Sark's guys from Washington. They're bringing five with him, plus a strength and conditioning guy, which you pretty much need, I think, to have your guy in there that you really understand how he's going to do, what you want him to do. Doesn't mean one guy's better than, the other guy. But I think those guys do have to work really closely together. So it's probably when it was up for grabs, you might have liked to see almost an equal kind of blending of the two. But, with the former USC coaches moving on, now it's absolutely Sark's staff. And I think bringing in the two line coaches from who they are, where they got, what their experience is. And, I just think, in coaches Davis and in Dresden, you've got two really, really, big time professionals who've been there at the, at the top level and who's, everything about it says, these are very good hires. And then, you have Sark's people who I think, in terms of a situation where you need stability at USC at this point, that's another way of giving them stability. Once the players who are going to return, decide, then you've got a you know, a big nucleus of a coaching staff who really knows what Sark wants to do, how he wants to do it. So, so I think, you know, you can make the case that, at this point in time, you know, where you would have said, gosh, you hate to lose Tommy Robinson or you hate to lose, you know, Clancy Pendergast. You've still got, you know, you've got a staff who shouldn't lose any time in terms of how they deal with one another, how they deal with the head coach. So I think that's a positive. We'll see, you know, if things change and how they, you know, how they approach the, you know, the winter workouts and how many players they've got for spring and, you know, how that all works because you are, you know, putting in a new, basically a new offense and a new, you know, defense. And I guess, you know, having the ability to not have to coach your own coaches first, whereas if you'd assemble the staff from a number of different places, you'd have to spend time coaching the coaches, then coaching the players. That won't have to happen. So I think that's a plus without a doubt. So not a bad you know place they find themselves in right now.
Yeah, I think stability, like you mentioned, is certainly important. There was a lot of instability, and I think it caused a lot of problems on, you know, just we saw it with the fan base on the Peristyle, or, you know, I think people are starting to calm down a little bit at least. But, you know, not knowing where the assistants were coming from and who was staying and who was leaving. But now, you know, we're going to see all these guys on campus tomorrow. I guess you know, most of them, like you said, came from Sark's staff in Washington, but, you know, we saw some outside guys. One of them, though, it looks like he's still going to be coaching for a little while, and we might not see him on campus for a few weeks.
Oh, Coach Trevor. Yeah, I know. Certainly for another week anyway. And it would be another, you know, reunion against, you know, Pete Carroll and all the USC guys that are, you know, at Seattle. So, yeah, I mean, it's a way of staying in touch with the NFL playoffs as they go forward. And it's interesting that, you know, you end up with the USC interest, the most direct USC interest will be on the 49ers sideline, as opposed to you know Pete Carroll, you know, on the other sideline. So that certainly gives you a reason to be watching the NFL playoffs. One of the other things you think about is in this kind of battle that we always see in college football between you know the coast and the East Coast bias and the West Coast, you know, da da da. The NFL is kind of starting to lean a whole lot west. If you've got, you know, you got San Francisco, Seattle, and Denver, three of the four teams left are about, you know, as west coast as it's possible to go, and kind of makes for, you know, west coast fans to have a kind of a neat rooting interest, but it also it's neat to have a coach that you're watching and wondering, you know, when does he when is he able to come to USC? Because that's a pretty key spot, that offensive line coach, and coaching is really going to be paramount just because of the numbers, and you know the fact that you're losing three of the guys who started on the offensive line, in Las Vegas won't be here, three of the five, so there's some work to be done, and several of the guys are coming back, coming off major surgery. A lot on the plate for the offensive line coach. So be fun to watch, obviously, and gives you a rooting interest one way or the other. I mean, I think USC fans, you know, that's one of those games you might be rooting both ways.
Yeah, I mean, we have the local – there's a lot of local fans, you know, California guys that like the 49ers just because it's a California team. There's a lot of people that now root for the Seattle Seahawks because of the Pete Carroll connection. And now you're talking about, you know, a future USC offensive line coach also on the 49ers team. So I think there's a lot of different reasons why people be rooting for both these teams. But it's good. I think it's going to be a great NFC championship game. I mean, it's just two really powerful teams right now.
And it's the carryover of the – Carroll Harbaugh, you know, rivalry from, you know, Stanford and USC. So, and that's kind of neat that there was for a while the attitude of, you know, college doesn't really matter. College coaches don't really matter. Here you got, you know, the hottest two, you know, franchises in NFL football are two guys who, you know, made their name in college football and very recently and made their rivalry in college football. And here they go into the NFL, and it just continues on. It's not, it's like they didn't leave USC and Stanford. You know, it's still there. And it's interesting that, you know, a lot of people would say, you can't do that, the NFL. You know, it's just, it's a different world. It's a different, you know, all this, I guess, all the circumstances in a way are changed. It's not about recruiting. It's not about, you know, all the kind of things that, and there was some, you know, rah-rah elements, you know, in terms of both Pete and Harbaugh, in terms of how they conducted them, you know, themselves. And there were people who thought, you know, I don't know if that works at the NFL. Kind of neat to see that it does work at the NFL, at the very, you know, top end of the NFL. And it just continues on. I'm not sure anybody would have guessed that it would be able to go like that. Certainly not at Seattle. I think that, you know, with their track record over the years, to have Seattle, you know, become that kind of a dominant franchise, you know, with Pete, you know, fairly quickly, and then and Harbaugh just, you know, not miss a beat coming out of Stanford. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is pretty neat. So definitely check that out next Sunday, and you can see former USC coaches, future USC coaches, a lot of stuff going on in that NFL game now that college football is over. But I wanted, so we talked about some of the new coaches, Dan, coming in, and you talk about some of the continuity there, but what about the guys that were on the staff? And there's a few big names, and the one, you know, that came out, I guess, first and a lot of people are talking about is former USC coach, head coach, Lane Kiffin, joining Nick Saban, of all people, in Alabama as the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. Kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there was always that connection. They share the same agent. So, and then, you know, I mean, Lane had gone down there, you know, in the off season and done some consulting work, and I guess did some at the end of the season. And I guess there's a, you know, kind of a bonding there. And obviously, Nick wants to go in a little bit different direction. You know, college football is changing, even in the SEC. And if you looked at the scores as the season went on, you look what Gus Malzahn, you know, brought to, you know, Auburn with a whole different way of putting up points. And I think this is Nick Saban's response. It's an interesting one. I know some of us are probably a little puzzled. See, Nick Saban wasn't at the Washington State game. We were. And, you know, that's hard to get over sometimes, remembering some of those moments. It'll be interesting to see what, because Lane does come from a pro background, you know, running the pro offense that Nick had always, you know, wanted to run. Now he wants to run an updated pro, you know, style offense, which I think is interesting, which it's where Sark got to, you know, before Lane did. And I think Sark probably tried to convince Lane to go there, and that was something Lane didn't want to do. Now I'm guessing he's tasked to do that at Alabama, which is, that's interesting. I just find that very, very interesting and see how that works out. I mean, evidently their personalities somehow mesh. You could tell even when Lane, the one year in the SEC, the one coach that, you know, there might've been some issues, say with Urban Meyer in Florida, or with the Mike Slide, the head of the SEC, between Lane and those guys, they never got any sense that Lane and Nick Saban had any kind of issues. So the storyline, as Lane likes to use that word, that people will most pay attention to in terms of assistant coaches. He will be the most famous assistant coach, the most watched assistant coach, the most mentioned assistant coach on College Game Day in history, probably, my guess would be. Maybe other than, say, Ed Orgeron, the last last eight games of the USC season. Lane will be, and again, it's a storyline that involves USC. It seems like USC is never going to step out of the limelight.
Yeah, that'll be – now the USC branches have extended out, or the roots have extended out into SEC country, and, you know, Mike's live, didn't even want to mention Lane Kiffin's name before. Now he's the offensive coordinator at Alabama. He's probably going to have to mention him a time or two now. But that,
I guess the good news is they don't take the assistant coaches to the that 3-day media and preseason media thing that it's hard to even describe what it is that the SEC does every year. But it would be interesting if you took. Now it'll be in Birmingham as it always is. My guess is if Alabama didn't take one of the players and took one of the assistant coaches, Lane might be the most interviewed person there.
Yeah.
Just because there is that, you talk about attracting attention, and without even trying, it just happens. There's just something about Lane Kiffin's persona that, you know, he's just not able to probably stay, a lot out of the limelight. I mean, he certainly did, toward the end of the season. He was on game day, once. And other than that, though, he was not a, not a big in the spotlight as far as the way USC season, evolved. But there he is again. And it's kind of, it'll be a sidelight. People will at least have a reason now to pay attention out here to the SEC and what's going on. I might have more than that if other things play out. So it looks like Mike Summers will be the offensive line coach at Florida. And there, he's in another, kind of potentially one and done situation with the way their offense went last year. And, he's got the challenge of, the offense that mostly famous for the two offensive linemen blocking one another really well, actually, in that one game where the highlight, Florida game, where the two offensive linemen located one another and absolutely delivered just a perfect downfield block on one another. Other than that, Florida's offense, nobody mentioned it at all. And so he's there, and who knows where Coach O might end up. We certainly see all the rumors now about reuniting with Lane. Who knows? That'd be hilarious times 10.
Well, there were some reports of that before, and then our friend Bruce Feldman, who is pretty tight with Orgeron just because he wrote a book about him and spent the whole year with him down there at when he was the head coach at Ole Miss and covered him when he was in Miami. So there's a lot of history there. Bruce didn't say he has any quotes or anything, but he said, he tweeted out earlier this morning that, these reports weren't true. He's not expected. He says he's not, he's pretty sure that's not going to happen and never was. So.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Bruce on that, but it was fun to look at the rumors.
Oh yeah.
just because everybody, loves to have, there's rumors. I mean, I always thought it would have been more likely that he'd reunite with Tommy Robinson at Texas would be more likely a scenario as far as I was concerned. That it was great to see Tommy Robinson. It looks like ends up at Texas. Somebody who could not have done a better job and could have not have left here on better terms. The way he handled the running backs and the way, just a good, solid, great guy. And to see him end up at Texas with, Coach Strong, it'd be pretty neat thing for Tommy and for Texas. I think they'll be pleased. And who knows, USC got Texas's D-line coach. Can it go the other way around? I don't know. I think one would think that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for Texas or for Coach O if something like that worked out.
There's been some head coaching turnover. Some of the bigger programs, obviously, we'll probably still see some trickle down from that. Anything out there you think that if Ed Orgeron was still going to hold out for a head coaching gig, that there's something that could come his way?
Well, I think two things there. I think if he stayed and coached through the Las Vegas Bowl, and none of us are ever probably going to know that whole story, it would be probably a cautionary tale for the judgmental people on the P who can come in and say, you know, he did this for this reason, or he's this or he's that. Those of us who know him really well really don't know what happened, why, how, and are puzzled. There's no question about it. But for those who don't know him, to think they can absolutely tell you what his motivation was there, or he was saying this, but he really meant that, or he said this. No, I would just caution everybody to, you know, relax on trying to be so absolutely judgmental about, you know, things like, oh, he said he was wanted a head coaching job, but, you know, he'll take an assistant job or whatever. Just, I would cool that. Sometimes, you know, when you say you need a, you know, you need something to say. I think it was more USC saying he was leaving for a head coaching job. And they, no one was going to go into exactly what happened. So I think if had Louisville, had he coached through the whole season, through the Las Vegas Bowl, and had Louisville opened up in a way, say, where they really opened it up, I don't think they ever did. I think Bobby Petrino was on their radar from the beginning, and they were, the question was, do we allow Bobby Petrino to come back, considering A, how he left Louisville, and B, what happened at Arkansas? And that was the thing they had to work through. They didn't really, I don't think, at Louisville, work through anything else. So there wasn't like a plan B. But that would have been, to me, had he been able to, you know, finish out the year, gotten the 3 weeks of kind of exposure. Coaching through the Las Vegas Bowl would have meant had an offer from USC to come back in the circumstances, in the way USC wanted him to come back. I think Ed, you know, would be in a position to be involved in jobs like that. Whether Vanderbilt, you know, whether that one, just because Vandy's kind of a, you know, one of a kind place in the SEC. And the other question is, Does Ed's 3 years at Ole Miss really make it more difficult, you know, for an SEC job? I don't know that. You just wish that his resume would have included all nine games at USC with the kind of resounding, you know, finish that, you know, they probably would have had for him, and a, you know, kind of a walking away that would have been, you know, much more sellable, let's say, to athletic directors. If you're an athletic director, you're looking around the country, and if you don't know the story at USC, or you don't know how that really went down, you're probably thinking, gosh, I don't know, what do you do? So probably a top assistant job at a really top program that gets turned around fairly quickly, where he is, you know, recruiting coordinator, defensive line, much the same, you know, role he had at USC. Might put him in a, you know, a place like that. Does he want to go, say, the Western Kentucky job? And I may have missed it. Whether I knew they were interviewing assistants there, is that, you know, they're one of the, I guess, after there were for a number of years, there were 120 Division I's, and then there are five more, and Western was one of the five that went, you know, moved up from Division I AA to Division I. That kind of a job, or an Arkansas State job, I don't know. I would say it's a hard pull for Ed this year, unless someone really, really knows him, and really say knows the you know, the inside story at USC. In terms of all the things that happened in the, you know, the last couple of months. But I'd say probably not. I would say probably the rumors of him, you know, going to one of the, you know, either top programs or maybe the NFL would be the case. If you go to the NFL, does that mean you're probably not coming back to college? I don't know. He's such a good recruiter, and he can create, you know, such a bond with his players as he did at USC. We'll see. I think the Ed Orgeron story has yet to be written. And just as we don't know about the end at USC, I think we really, you can't know where that goes. But I would certainly not be harshly judgmental about Ed, as you see some people, you know, want to be.
Yeah, Western Kentucky ended up, they hired pretty quickly their offensive coordinator, Jeff Brohm.
Did hire him. Yeah. Okay, I knew Jeff was a leading candidate. I had known him actually as a he was a high school coach out of Louisville Trinity, and his dad had been a star in Louisville and you know, coaching family. He coached his whole life. His son, I think he had actually a couple of kids who were really good football players at Louisville Trinity. But it certainly looked like that was the way they were going to go. Okay, missed that, but yeah. So, you know, there really aren't the numbers of jobs at this point. Now, whether some of the NFL jobs, you know, go to colleges, it's certainly a lot easier now to justify, you know, a college coach. I guess the other thing, though, is people are more looking at, for example, Washington goes with Jay Gruden, kind of, you know, his brother was famous. But the Bengals offensive coordinator, instead of getting a big high profile hire that owner Dan Snyder had liked to do since Steve Spurrier might have been his first, but he'd always wanted kind of the spicy hires. Now is the NFL going to go more for the the low key coordinators, or will they take another look and say, college coaches have been doing pretty well, and obviously Bill O'Brien, comes in out of Penn State. It'll be interesting to see, with the few that are left, does that create any kind of, domino effect with some openings?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that. There's a lot of things could still happen, but it does seem less likely now for Ed Orgeron getting a head coaching position. But we'll see what happens and keep following that story as it breaks. We had a question from Frank in Gold River. Let me read it for you, Dan. He said, I think Pat Hayden thought that once the emotions wore off, Steve Sarkisian would have been a better fit for USC long-term than Coach Ed Orgeron would have been. Also, I believe of the four guys that Hayden interviewed, Sark was the only one who said he would have no problem keeping Ed Orgeron on the staff. Hayden gambled that he could have the best of both, but Coach Orgeron left. The biggest accomplishment, I think, for recruiting on Sark's side that's not being talked about is him getting enough players to come to Washington to turn the program around. If you're a kid who's considering going to a rainy hellhole, this is Frank's quote, to play football over the last 5 years, you're most likely going to Oregon. Oregon. I said Oregon like what's his name? Lou Holtz, like Oregon. That's from Frank in Gold River. Sorry about that.
I guess you could make Seattle would make the case that there are also a lot of good reasons to go to Seattle. I don't think it's you're recruiting Southern California kids, a lot, for the great part, or you're recruiting from somewhere else, and there isn't as much high school football in the state of Washington, and no question about that. I think the focus there is that they thought the best solution was the combination of Sark and Ed, and were fairly confident they could have Ed with the offer, that they made for Ed, and that wasn't the case. And they hadn't probably stayed close enough to Ed. I think they were staying close to Sark, but they hadn't stayed close enough to Ed. So I think they looked at it as, well, if we get Sark and get the guy we want, and we also get Ed, this is powerful. And I think a lot of people have said, yeah, that's a pretty good way to go. And the miscalculation was they didn't have Ed. So that's what left people kind of, in that middle place where they said, Sark and Ed, hey, like the looks of that. Because it basically would have been a blending of the holdover guys who had done such a great job and of Sark, who had, you know, over 5 years had rebuilt Washington. It probably didn't help that Sark's team won only, you know, one game less than Ed's team did over the, you know, last, you know, 8 games. But other than that, you can understand where USC was coming from. Can we put the two together, take advantage of both of their strengths? We get our guy who we feel, you know, comfortable with, and it's a kind of a in the family hiring and a stability kind of a situation. And we guarantee stability with Ed. But then Ed leaves and most of the other coaches leave, and you've got that, you know, period of a month or so where you've got players leaving, and it was a difficult thing. You also had, and this is tough, if you're one of the three, let's say the first three coaches that Sark brings down, and you're down at, you know, you're at USC, you're going to high school games, but you're also not coaching the team. So you're in the building, you're in the case center, players are there, you're there, the old coaches are there, the holdovers. What do you do? If you talk to the players, if you really start engaging them and getting involved with them, does it look like you're trying to, you know, impose yourself on a team that still has a bowl game to play and still has a coaching staff in place? So I think that the new guys chose not to do that. But then if you're one of the players who's coming back or thinking about coming back, and you got, you know, you see new coaches in the building who aren't talking to you, and it's like, well, you know, they didn't feel like it was their place maybe to be talking to the players, because the players all had, you know, coaches and position coaches, and they had a game to play. So you got to, you know, those 3 weeks where kids aren't getting to know them, even if they see them around, it was a difficult situation. And Sark's guys were put into a, you know, pretty difficult situation on a daily basis, I think. And sometimes there's nothing you can do about that except, you know, get through it. And now, you know, you don't have that situation at this point. They're the coaches, the players are the players, and, you know, everybody now has a chance to really get to know one another and how we're going to do things and what we're going to do. But until now, that really wasn't possible. So, and I think that a decision has been made, you know, from Sark down, that they're really going to emphasize that kind of getting to know the players and getting to really understand where they're coming from, and understanding that there's going to be some, you know, some emotion in terms of losing coaches that they were really close to. And that's the way you would want it. You would want to have had a staff that was here that these kids feel really loyal to. If you're a new coach coming in, you want to say, hey, I hope they feel that way about me. It wasn't the ideal situation, say, for the last month, for the new coaches, the new staff to be in, having to just handle, you know, kind of an emotional, you know, roller coaster that these kids have been on, and at, you know, the end of a long series of things like that. So now they get the chance to be themselves, to really coach them up and show these kids who they are and how they're going to do things.
All right. I wanted to talk about the scholarship distribution chart a little bit, and then some of the early enrollees. If you look at the chart overall, and you can go, if you go to uscfootball.com, there's this little gold bar across the top under more. You can see the scholarship distribution chart there. We link to it in the Peristyle every once in a while. It's, you know, we keep updating it, and you can see what's going on there. But with 5 early enrollees leaving, Dan, down to 11 seniors on this team. And, you know, we haven't heard from Hayes Pillard or Joshua Shaw. It seems like, you know, they haven't announced yet. They're probably going to stick around, but you know, it's probably what we're going to see. But overall, there's only 53 players currently on scholarship. And if you add 19 to that, you know, you can do the quick math. That gets you to 72. That's the max it looks like USC can get to going into the 2014 season.
Right, and I think the immediate impact is, you know, spring ball, because of so many guys, 12, 13 guys, I guess, 13 coming off of season-ending something or other, whether it was surgery or an injury, and how many of them are available in the spring. And while you might be able to go into a game, as USC did often, with 53 or fewer scholarship players, it's still a miracle how they did, you know, some of that. But going into spring practice with those kinds of numbers, because I think one of the other impacts we're going to see is a lot of the really valuable walk-ons, the guys who really made it possible to practice, a lot of those guys are seniors. You know, for the kids that, you know, they gave scholarships to in the fall were, you know, specifically because they were seniors and graduating. So you won't have as many walk-ons for the spring as well. You know, you do get more walk-ons in the fall. They really went out and did a pretty good job of, you know, getting guys like, the tight end, Sullivan and Wilson, who came in and really gave some, terrific support. Abe Markowitz became a walk-on, but terrific support. Guys like that are probably not going to show up in the middle of the year. So how they and that was one of the great, I think, abilities that the Ed Orgeron, Clay Helton coaching staff showed was the ability to practice fast and hard with few players. And that, it'll be interesting to see if that becomes a learned, skill for Sark and his guys who haven't had to do that, but are going to have to do it in the spring. But I think those numbers in the spring are really impactful, and I don't think we know how that's going to work out.
And we don't know, but there will be apparently five early enrollees of five guys that could come in and participate in the spring. The spring semester actually starts today, we've only seen, I think, from USC sending out only one officially has signed on, but maybe I missed something there. But has anything become official yet with those signees?
Yeah, I don't think so. And maybe, you know, we get the official word tomorrow. Do they want to have a day to make sure everything goes through? And that would seem to be another reason for tomorrow to be occurring when it does, where you can, announce that at least you have those additions. There's four more freshmen in addition. I think they'll help. I don't know that all four of them are going to be able to practice in the spring. I think we'll find out all those details tomorrow, whether all four can practice in the spring. But every little bit helps, I think, at this point. It's hard to get excited about the ability of those guys to, contribute in the fall. And maybe if everybody comes back healthy, they won't have to. And you can only hope. And maybe one, where you're not expecting it and just happens to be in the right place at the right time, like Marcus Martin was when he was a 17-year-old freshman, not expected, to contribute. And there he was. Max Turk, followed the next year. So I guess in that, vein, you've got a chance of let's say maybe one of them by fall being able to jump out there. And then this year, even though you didn't see him in the spring, you got Quentin Powell, for example, just making such an impact on special teams, and certainly looked like he could have, without the experience, would have been harder, but he certainly, could have been an impact player had he played, more plays. Leon McQuay, another guy who did make it in early and as a true freshman was able to, have an impact. But that's asking a lot to have. I think where USC is now, what the old coaching staff decided was, they had to play perfect football. They had to play perfect assignment football to get away with the numbers. So it was interesting. They made the choice to go with 12, 13 players on defense, for example, even, against Stanford, and decided that the ability to have veteran guys who knew exactly what they were doing and to coach those guys up for games was the most important way to go. And that's the way they went. And for the most part, it worked. what the decision will be this year, I don't know. I mean, for example, they made the decision just to go with the two linebackers, Hayes Pillard and Anthony Sorrell, even though both Michael Hutchings and Quentin Powell had really shown some great potential, but one missed assignment, and on that defense, you could be in trouble, and the ability to communicate was so important. So that'll be interesting to watch. Where do they come down on the on that spectrum of getting a solid nucleus of a few players and coaching them up so they can play perfect, or getting a rotation going? USC, I think last year had more thought they were going to try to get a rotation going, and then went away from that thinking as the year went on.
We got one more question about the roster a little bit. I went from Lamar. I wanted to read this one to you, Dan. He said, "What a great bowl season. As I watched the national championship game, it appears that the two teams, it appears that those two teams were stronger on line of scrimmage." Sorry, I have to reword this a little bit here. "A little more athletic than our Trojans. I know that we all point out to the reduced scholarships, but I'm talking just about the starters. The Trojan offensive line can't match up with some of these elite programs at tackle. Before Marcus Martin left, the interior three could, but we need more Marcus Martins and Leonard Williams-type pedigrees moving forward. Recruit locally and make a push for that beef in the South. What are those kids eating? My goodness, they're huge." That's from Lamar.
Can't disagree. I do think that just strength and sheer athleticism, size and athleticism. USC went for some leaner guys. Pretty good, in terms of size, when you've got a bunch of 6'6", 6'7", guys, and they're, 300 pounds, give or take five either way, you're pretty athletic. However, if what you're trying to do is to really knock people off the line of scrimmage, that may not, be the way to go as much. Those guys might be more, let's say, not so much suited for, but more adaptable to the way Sark is going to go, where you don't have to always, you're going to run the ball and run a lot. I think that's a big plus of Sark's system. But it doesn't look like you're going to have guys who absolutely can just, road graders, the Alabama, Stanford kind of guys. And as we saw, the way defenses are playing now, that doesn't guarantee you success. I mean, Stanford couldn't get it done against USC, couldn't get it done in the Rose Bowl. And Alabama, couldn't score enough points against some of the people who were putting up big points. So I think this is a time when college football is really evolving in terms of where they're going to go with those big guys up front. How are you going to do it? I do think you have more ability to handle, let's say, if you don't have as many of those Alabama, Stanford kind of guys up front with what Sark is going to do if you spread the field a little bit. I mean, he says it's absolutely don't call it a spread. But I do like the up-tempo, and you wouldn't be surprised if they really have a quarterback next year who does take off and run every once in a while. I think that's something at the NFL now you're seeing, play breaks down and can you make something out of it? Or can you make them, cover, the quarterback? USC has had trouble figuring out how to do that. If you look at, UCLA, what's the difference? I'm not sure if I were, coaching against USC or against UCLA, I might not just say, in every play, let's just tackle the quarterback. I don't care what happens with the rest of their team. Let's tackle him. See if they can beat us with the other 10 guys. Because if we tackle him every play, I think we got a shot. And if you make one of those other guys beat you, but don't let him beat you. And I think if you go in, thinking that, so where that takes you in terms of Sark's offense, does he say, with Cody, you've shown that the few occasions where you took off and where you were really thinking, I'm going to, if I see the opportunity, and not hesitate, not, I mean, I think the times Cody was so conscientious in terms of all his reads and all the things that, that they wanted him to do that, that he maybe was overly, you know, conscientious, in terms of going through those. But I think my guess will be, he'll be a little more, encouraged and poised and able to be athletic and take advantage of what the defenses are going to give him. And, yeah, I mean, I think he showed he could. I think mostly his issue was choosing when to take off and how long to stay in the pocket and when to absolutely make that call. And even he throws the other thing with Cody, he throws so well, so accurately on the run that even when he'd take off, he was still looking to throw the ball before he got to the line of scrimmage, which probably got him to the line of scrimmage a little more slowly than you wanted if you wanted him to take advantage of you know, some openings and just take, you know, 6 yards if you could get it. So we'll see how that develops, but that's something I think to watch in the spring. Probably maybe we'll be able to tell a little bit in the winter workouts if, you know, they're talking to him about how and when you tuck it and take off.
All right, Dan, one last thing I wanted to talk about. We're going to switch gears from football to basketball. The USA Trojans lost by 20 to number one Arizona last night. It was close, though, in the first half. They were making a game of it. 0-3 in the Pac-12. It doesn't look like there's a lot of great wins on the schedule, you know, so far in Andy Enfield's first year. What do you think's going on with this USC basketball team?
I don't know. It's puzzling. I watched them in preseason. I was fairly encouraged. They were playing pretty fast in scrimmages and what have you. And so... And look pretty enthusiastic about what they were doing. Beating Xavier. Xavier's leading the A-10. That's my, you know, I pay attention to Xavier, so they beat Xavier in the tournament. They beat Dayton at Dayton. Dayton's a good basketball team. Had been ranked, and beating Dayton, you know, 11,000-12,000 people in the Dayton Arena. That's a good win. They beat Boston College. You know, Boston College beat somebody in the ACC the other day. I mean, Boston College is an Atlantic Coast Conference team, and they handled them, you know, pretty well. And then it just looks like they just hit a wall somehow. And are, you know, I thought, for example, and I think Andy thought Arabi was going to be significantly better. Wesley is improved. JT Terrell, you know, he had a really good year last year. He's had, you know, academic issues and other kind of issues. You had, you brought in Pecan Hard. He started 3 years in the ACC at Maryland. That's not a bad, you know, and here he goes and has, what, 20 points in the game winner, game tire and game winner at Dayton. He comes back against UCLA and zip, you know, nothing. It's a puzzling team. You don't know, for example, how are they trying to win these basketball games? It doesn't look like they – I think they can run the floor pretty well when they do, but if they only do it once or twice a game and they don't, you know, play enough defense and they don't rebound well enough to get into the transition game. But they don't look at all like if you would have put a, you know, video on of the Florida Gulf Coast teams at the end of last year. And then you put a video on of these USC teams, it would be hard to believe they're coached, you know, by the same, you know, same person. They're obviously not the same personnel, and they're not playing the same opponents. But it's surprising to me the difficulties they're having running an offense. It's surprising to me the difficulties they're having running anything off of their 7'2" postman. I mean, you know, they start with 7'2", and even though he's only a freshman, Nikola Jovanovic is 6'10", and he's got some skills. He can run the floor. He can pass. He can shoot. He's a perimeter shooter, and he's 6'10". It just seems like whatever they're trying to do isn't happening and isn't going together well. And I don't get the sense that, you know, they're all excited about being out there and doing what they're doing or having a lot of fun doing it. And I wish I had a more of a sense of what's going on. But the team that beat Xavier, beat Dayton, beat Boston College doesn't seem to be around anymore when you get beat, you know, give up 107 points. I mean, they played 239 games in the history of USC, UCLA. UCLA, with all those great teams, some of the greatest in college basketball history with the greatest coach, had never scored 107 points before this year. And what, you know, what caused that USC team to just basically go over and lay down, I don't think we know. I mean, this isn't a nice UCLA team, but not a great team, not a great athletic UCLA team that runs the floor really well. So to give up 107 points to them is pretty discouraging. And then to get beat by, what, a combination, 39 points on your home court, even though, you know, you're Arizona's number one in the country and deserves to be that way and plays with, you know, size and athleticism and toughness and poise and a sense of this is who we are and this is what Arizona basketball is all about. And you don't have a sense of what's USC basketball all about right now. Where is it going? You know, is it strictly a matter of wait till next year and, you know, the first recruits come in and the transfers? And if you look at the four recruits coming in with Jordan McLaughlin at point guard leading the way, who I saw this summer and just love him, and he's going to be a great player. And we've seen the two transfers. Caden Reinhart is a great shooter, a kid from Notre Dame by way of Las Vegas, and then Darian Clark, really athletic, tremendous athlete out of like 6'7", 230, out of Charlotte. And then with the four recruits coming in, that changes the look, you know, significantly next year. But this year you would like to be able to establish the sense of this is what USC basketball is all about and this is how we go about it. And we haven't seen that. And it seems to be going the other way. And this is the time of year you want to be picking up some momentum, not looking like you ran into a wall, which is kind of what they've done.
All right. Well, Dan, great stuff and way to carry the whole show. So that's awesome. Thanks very much for doing that.
Well, I enjoyed it. And yeah, this is a looking ahead time now, I think. And the time for, you know, some speculation and getting through some really interesting, if, you know, dramatic at all and up and down. And one of the reasons maybe there is so much kind of angst and what have you is people have gone through a lot, you know, and they've, this has been a battle, but, ended up with a 10-win season. Through all that, I'm not sure anybody else could. I mean, you know, USC people want to feel, you know, something about it. They probably, given all those circumstances, you can really say, I think, nobody else in the country could have finished with 10 wins, having had everything happen the way it did. So something to take out of that season. And then move on and hopefully, and I think the best thing absolutely that I think Sark said immediately when he came in, and it was a tribute to Ed and the current the staff that was still in place. And he said, and I you can't say anything better when you come into USC. He said, the thing that happened and the thing we saw with Coach Orgeron is he showed us you could win immediately. Ed didn't have any excuses, didn't give any reason why that team couldn't challenge everybody on their schedule the rest of the way. And I think the same applies to Sark and that kind of motivation coming out of, you know, Sark's, you know, there's not going to be, not going to be a place for excuses, not going to be a place for saying we need a couple of years to get this going. Kind of a no excuses, kind of a theme, and we expect to win, and we expect to win right away. And we're not going to concentrate on who's not here or what's not here or what the obstacles are, but just how do we win right away. And that's the most encouraging thing, I think, of all with the changeover is the sense of we're expecting to win right away, and we're expecting to have guys step up. And if it has to be, guys like the tight end pair of Wilson and Sullivan, well, then that's what happens. And they did last year, and just expect them to do so this year. Or right. Nathan Gertler, who may finally be a scholarship player this year, or Ryan Dillard, guys who may benefit, you know, if they fall short in scholarships. You would certainly think they would. But I think, you know, that's the theme will be somebody's going to step up. And we just, this is USC, and we'll, figure out a way.
All right. Well, again, great stuff, Dan. Appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll talk to you tomorrow over on USC's campus and back on the podcast next week.
Yep, can't wait. Tomorrow is going to be a good day, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I would think the new coaches are too, and probably the players. I mean, this will be, you know, getting to know one another week, and it'll be kind of neat.
Cool. Well, thanks again, Dan, and everyone else, thanks very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. We'll talk to you all again next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.